Welcome back. We're getting an update on chemtrail research from Clifford Carnicom. His website again is Carnicom, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M, Carnicom.com. Real easy, no problem. Bookmark it. And if you have friends who are interested in this issue and look up and see things in the sky that don't quite add up to them, take them to Carnicom.com. It is the place to go. Cutting edge. Look at the top of my homepage for Clifford's name. You can click right underneath that and go to the website if you happen to forget how to spell it. Okay, Clifford, we are ready to go.
Thank you, Jeff. And if I'm allowed to interject here before I carry on with a word of thanks, I would like to thank the many people across the country that are involved in the research, that send me information, that ask me many questions. Basically, I truly have many thanks for the effort that the people across the country are putting forth. I also want and need to apologize at the same time that I simply cannot keep up with email at all. Most of my time goes towards making a living, and I get a chance to read everything, but basically I have to put my effort into that place where I think it benefits the cause the greatest, and that's to establish the information and facts as best I'm able to. So I do hope that people bear with me. There is so much work that needs to be done.
Right.
And
right.
I don't have any staff whatsoever. We need serious professional help on the medical, the legal, biological side. There's so much help that's needed. And if what we really need are people to step up to the plate and offer tangible assistance, get out the microscope, get out the lab gear, and actually do the work. That's where I can put my energy, and I don't mean to dismiss people in any way, and I hope that they're understanding of that.
Well, that's a very good statement, and I wish I could say the same. I cannot even read all of mine anymore. It's too much.
Yeah, I'm able to read. I just can't respond, and I know that I hope people don't think I'm ignoring them, because I try to take all it in and put it into place.
Well, I think they understand. Let's hope so. Anyway.
The objective here is to establish a method of acquiring or in collecting particulate matter from the atmosphere at extremely small sizes, small sizes that we would not think would even normally be possible.
Okay.
And so we brought up the method and topic of electrostatic precipitation, and I started a discussion on that. If anyone gets a chance to witness this process of electrostatic precipitation, it's an amazing event to witness. Now, one of the benefits, I think, and advantages of the work that I'm doing is I'm attempting to establish methods which are independent of me, which can be duplicated or replicated by people across the country, and also do not require any excessive means, because I have limited means myself, and anything I'm doing is basically an application of analysis and deduction, mm-hmm. as opposed to material resources.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm describing is something that is accessible, and as the evening goes on, this is one of the things that I hope to impart to the listeners, is that the methods I'm describing are accessible to most anyone with fairly limited means. A lot of what I'm doing is jury-rigging with equipment that I have. If people have access to the web, there is a page that describes this method that was developed. It's called Electrostatic Precipitation Method Developed. It's on the front page, and it outlines the method and the hardware for doing this. As an example of how effective this method can be, though, you know, I did test this on smoke, and I briefly described that. I filled a glass container three times with smoke.
Okay.
Each time that I hooked this up to the source of energy, high voltage, low current, energy, within seconds you would see the smoke immediately swirl around and collect on the outside, or what would be on the inside, of the glass container. After three times of doing that, each time taking roughly 10 seconds, there was a clear layer of smoke visible, literally a layer of smoke visible on that glass jar. So it's very effective and very rewarding in terms of getting access to the types of materials that we are speaking of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There is and an example on the very bottom of that page that shows that test. And, you know, the achievement is that you can work with something as fine as smoke is, and smoke ranges apparently from about a tenth of a micron to 5 microns, somewhere in there. Very fine particulate matter. You can collect this material if it's on the inside of a glass jar. In my case, what I did was just run a Q-tip along the inside of that surface. You can collect smoke particulate matter and get that material underneath a microscope, which is what we need to do. And this page shows that accomplishment. The smoke is clear as can be. It's collectible, and it can be looked at under the microscope, which is what I did.
Right.
So once the test was accomplished and the method showed itself to work very effectively, it was then a question of application. Application to the atmosphere, basically right outside my house. Now remember, the reason for doing this is one is seeking actually this metallic salt material. Is actually the motivation behind it. This is what I was attempting to find, was that which I was seeing that's recorded on film.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect the results which have been obtained. It was not my intent. It was a surprise to me, but it is a finding of fact and is therefore to be reported to the public, and hopefully the public will act accordingly on what has been found. The method of construction of that precipitator is outlined on the site. Basically, it consists of a collection device. In this case, just a real clear plastic container was the housing for it, equivalent to the glass jar before. The voltage source, if we all remember in high school or maybe college, it's funny how things come back around to either help us out later in life when we don't expect it. But if we remember those devices that you may have seen demonstrations of or in a lab class where you put your hand on this object and the person's hair stands straight up, called a Van de Graaff generator.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating device. I haven't worked with one since my days in lab schools. But there's a real application for this device right now. So if we want to know where that source of energy that we are talking about, a high voltage, 200,000 volts is the one I have. They can go up to 500,000 volts without any problem. Van de Graaff generators are the forerunners of the particle accelerators. That's actually why they were developed, the forerunners of the cyclotrons. It's amazing sometimes how a simple device can be at the very fundamental root of physics in our life. And this right now has a very important role to play. They are not that expensive. They are available. There's a company called Science First on the net that makes them available. This particular one was $125.
Uh-huh.
That's the main expense of this unit. And agreeably, it's not necessarily trivial, but it's also certainly accessible.
It's very accessible.
The main components of this device that I've created, modeling after that experiment by A.D. Moore in his book, are a Van de Graaff generator, a collection device, an electrode.
Mm-hmm.
Going into that container, a ventilation fan to provide a source of incoming air into that container, connected by a duct hose, a porous filtering material over the far end, or what I call the lee side of that airflow, purpose being to slow down the airflow as well as to allow it to pass, sort of a combined purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you're funneling air through a container, subjecting it to an extremely high voltage, low current electric field, and applying the methods of electrostatic precipitation in an attempt to collect particulate matter in the atmosphere.
Okay, all right.
Two microscope glass slides, in my case, are placed in the container to serve as collection devices. The business with a cotton swab on the smoke doesn't really work too well, because you don't want one of the things you're after, you're trying not to have the stuff contaminated by anything. You don't want a bunch of cotton fibers that you're having to look at. A glass slide worked amazingly well and basically duplicates what we talked about on the glass surface for the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And these glass slides showed themselves to be very effective particulate collection devices. As I talk about what has been found on these slides, understand that there is a great deal of other material also which is showing up on these slides, which needs to be analyzed. And the material generally will have a nature. You will have fibrous material that's showing up, and you will also have particulate matter that's showing up, which may indeed coincide exactly with the original supposition and motivation of seeking a metallic salt particle in the atmosphere.
Okay.
Because the findings, intermediate findings, were so unusual and remarkable, that is why my attention has been diverted to that direction right now. But people should understand that there is a great deal of material which appears to be showing up on these slides, and all of it requires analysis in great detail. And so there is no issue here of the aerosol operations being one thing one moment and another thing the other moment. All phases of the research that have accumulated over the last 2 years remain consistent and all require investigation. Unfortunately, there were results which were not anticipated, which we need to talk about. And those results include the findings of biological components on those glass slides.
Okay.
What has happened is that when those slides were collected and looked at under the microscope, particulate matter was seen, but that's a difficult thing to analyze. We're going to have to get spectroscopic or chemical lab tests on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fibers were showing up, and I just sort of am somewhat of an experimenter, so I just continued looking, and I put some iodine on this slide. I can't exactly remember why I did that, but I wanted to see any effect of staining. At this time, there was material which appeared to be of an organic nature, which started showing up on this slide. The microscope I'm speaking of generally would be ranging between 100 and 400 power.
Okay.
The material consistently started showing up across the slide as absorbing this iodine stain. I know from work that I've done that many things that I've worked with on biological sites seem to be very loving of iodine stain.
Does it color them?
Of this material, yes, absolutely. Whatever this material is, I'm going to call it binding material is what I use for the sake of example right now.
Right.
Binding material, whatever it is, or organic it appears to be, certainly seems to be very receptive to iodine stain.
All right, stand by. We'll pause and come right back and hear what these organic items may be from Clifford Carnicom, who has pulled them again out of the air, as it were. And fascinating. It's all on his website at carnicom.com, and we'll continue right after this. All right, I am looking at the illustrations, the images on carnicom.com of what Clifford has been able to find, pull out of the atmosphere with his explained techniques, very simple, really. And they look, well, you go ahead, Clifford. I see the word red blood cells right there, and I want to hear more.
Okay, Jeff, if people do have access to the Internet now, the link for this page is called Biological Operations Confirmed. That's the link that describes this information. And falling back, it may be that this material that I'm speaking of that is apparently organic may be visible under ordinary lighting conditions. All that I'm saying is that I didn't notice it when I was looking through and seeing some fibers and some particulate matter. Didn't notice anything particularly.
Uh-huh.
But the presence of the iodine stain apparently appears to play a significant role in exposing or developing the visibility of this, what I call organic base material, whatever it is. I'm not speaking of cellular structures at this time. I'm speaking of a base material which repeats itself over and over and over. It's very consistent. Actually appears to be down at the micron size or so, roughly, in terms of its basic structure. And this material showed up repeatedly in both slides that were tested. Actually, I've done this test three times. My testing is still limited, very much so. It's at the initial and early stages, but the findings do warrant disclosure and publishing of this information for the sake of investigative research.
Others are encouraged to do the same sorts of experiments.
Absolutely, and really urgently requested to participate in the study. And if this is to be refuted, then it needs to be refuted. If this is to be confirmed, it needs to be confirmed. But the fact is that action is required, and it's not all that difficult for all of us to now start becoming involved. Now, upon inspection of that base material, initially at 100 power or so, I did begin to see very clear indications of cellular structure. They are circular. They are geometric. I'm not a doctor. I have a fair amount of time in the life sciences in schools. I'm not going to make claims that I do not deserve or earn, but let's say I think I have enough background and sense to recognize cellular structures when I'm seeing them. And what repeatedly started to show itself amongst this material were the presence of cellular structures. If one then attempts to investigate those cellular structures, and I'm trying to make a distinction on iodine, that iodine stain was not used for the express purpose of attempting to stain the cellular structures.
I understand.
What actually occurred is that this base material appears to absorb a stain, and thus the cellular structures become visible. This is the mechanism which seems to be operative. Upon continued inspection of that cellular material and at a higher power, my claim and my statement is at this time that visually, in a visual sense, this material, these cellular structures appear to satisfy all of the visual characteristics of red blood cells. Now, in my case, I've spent a little bit of time looking at blood over the past year, both from a personal interest as well as curiosity. And there are certain patterns in red blood cell which have now become somewhat imprinted on my mind. I've looked at my own blood quite a bit. And important characteristics of blood cells are that they are spherical. The most important, I would say, would be their concave surfaces. This is a very important and distinguishing characteristic. Blood cells have a biconcave surface. Both sides are indented where it sinks in. There are some really fascinating photographs that are available for people, electron microscope photographs of blood cells. They're quite fascinating to see. In a very unique and characteristic shape. Now, in a poor or lower quality microscope, basically all that you pick up is that outer ring. You see a difference in the ring around the edge, which shows that depth of field changing as you're looking through the microscope. That's how you're picking up that concavity in the surface. This is the characteristic which first shows itself up through a, let's say, a medium to lower power microscope.
All right. Okay. Stand by. We'll be right back. Another email just in from Chris. Thank you. Today we were assaulted throughout the day with more chemtrails in Northern California. Okay, we're back talking with Clifford Carnicom. Red blood cells, no doubt, Clifford, are these human? Could they be some other species of animal for some reason or another, floating about the air? You've given this, I'm sure, all sorts of thought.
I won't say human at all at this point. What I will say is my statement as I did, by the best of my ability, they satisfy all of the characteristics of red blood cells as best as I am able to assess them.
Okay.
If I make an error, mm-hmm, I will be the first one to admit it. I will do my best to admit it. I'm simply saying that this is the best analysis that mm-hmm I'm able to make thus far with my background and my experience.
Okay. Over what period of time did you collect the samples?
When I collected this first sample, I basically put things on hold. The initial test, the actual apparatus that we talked about, mm-hmm, ran for approximately 1 hour, which is really shows itself to be quite effective. I didn't know exactly what to expect.
Okay.
But the unit ran for approximately 1 hour. There was fairly abundant particulate matter on the slides at that time, not visible by eye, but visible under the microscope. When these initial findings came out, I basically put them on hold for 24 hours because I wanted to basically repeat the experiment, which is a primary reason for anything that I'm doing here, is to have means and methods which are independent of me or any particular individual. And I did that. I waited to the next day, and I set up again and repeated the test, and I obtained exactly the same results.
Okay.
It is at that point that I decided to publish this material. Now, we had earlier discussions, and there has been research thus far that definitely did indicate the presence of biologicals, certainly in respect to fibrous material, that we've discussed at length, and included the role of the Environmental Protection Agency and their failure to identify that material when presented with it. Up until this point, biological aspects of this operation have always been considered by myself to be of an isolated case, of an extent unknown, and basically necessary for disclosure, but certainly not a primary focus necessarily of the operations. These findings do alter that interpretation. At least it provides for a sufficient case of serious consideration given to the examination of this material which has been found. If I can be somewhat assertive on the matter, I really have no interest what someone thinks or talks about,
uh-huh,
what they think this material is. There is a need to have these cells identified by type, and unfortunately, there is a call for independent researchers on this because the government refuses to play an official role in the serious analyses which are taking place. And the fact is, we need to know what types of cells they are.
Can you make these, excuse me for interrupting you, but can you make this material available to professionals who might want to offer analysis procedures for you?
Well, yes, but most certainly. But I guess one of the things I'm saying is that this method is now available for any of us with very limited means.
Right.
Basically, set up that experiment and do the work and put it under the domain that it deserves.
All right. We need to have people in the Northwest and the Northeast and the Southeast do this, or at least somehow come up with a means to assemble the materials, the equipment to perform it, and then maybe move it around to different locations and do the same kind of thing.
Right. And so, you know, the factual need is to have the cells identified. No ifs, ands, or buts, no speculation, no false claims. State it as it is and find out what they are.
What might they be, Clifford? What mundane explanation have you pondered that might explain this? Is there anything that comes to mind that makes sense?
You know,
avian, insect, what?
In terms of purpose or in terms of type?
In terms of type and reason for them being there. Could
right.
these be bird droppings? Could they be something on the ground that has somehow been whipped around by wind? Or do we really think these are descending from above? And how do we know that if that, in fact, is happening?
I try to entertain considerations as best I can. I can find no reasonable explanation for the apparent abundant existence of this material.
Right. And what elevation do you live, again, approximately?
Roughly 7,000 feet. Or
yeah, I remember you were up there. Okay.
6,500 where I'm at.
Right.
In terms of size and specifics, that can be established best I can with these cells. Human blood cells measure approximately 7 microns in size, 6 to 8. Remember, our human hair is roughly 60 to 100 microns thick. Human red blood cell is average of 7 microns. These cells that I am measuring are measuring an average of roughly 5 microns across, 4 to 6 microns. With that finding and the fact that they have the bioconcave surface, they are spherical, they seem to satisfy all the requirements of blood cells.
Right.
Consideration at that point, if there is a size discrepancy here, certainly in terms of human cells, consideration at that point has to be given to, number one, alteration of those cells in some way. The process of freeze drying does come to mind if one will take the time to investigate the results of work last year on other biologicals which were identified, which in fact were, again, red blood cells that were identified.
Okay.
That particular individual involved in that, to the best of his ability, assessed that those cells had been freeze dried, had been reduced in size through a drying process of some type. There are people that are saying drying results in crenation of the cells, but I don't know that freeze drying, which is quite a unique process, would necessarily.
So desiccation might easily explain the size differential.
It at least is a reasonable consideration.
Possibility. Okay.
I guess.
All right.
The second consideration, I think, would be one of species, alternative species, not necessarily considering just a human species. But and so this is a part of what I have done, is try to acquire and collect information on the size of red blood cells for various species.
Okay.
On that same page that we are speaking of, called Biological Operations Confirm, there is now a tabular listing of species, common species, domestic species, and the blood sizes associated with those. Just to give the listener an idea, they range generally from 3 to 7 microns.
Right, from dog all the way down to goat. Okay.
Right, so these particular cells would be falling right in that mid-range if you assume that they are at full constitution. If there is a drying process in place, that alters the picture considerably.
Pulls them down, what, 30%?
Well, I don't, you know, I think I don't know that yet. I've looked at it in terms of water. If half 90% of plasma is water, plasma is roughly 50% of blood. If you were to remove just the water and the plasma side, you could have a reduction down to 50% or so instead of in regards to surface area. So, you know, I think these would be two reasonable considerations to at least pose to the audience, one being alteration, potential alteration of a cell, and or consideration of a alternative species. Examples, a goat is a little over 3 microns, a dog is 7, a cow is 5.8.
Yeah.
I did pursue on a primate or a monkey blood also, and that came out of 7 microns, essentially identical to human blood. So the numbers are there, the methods are there, the data is there, the need is there to answer the questions which are now before us.
All right, they are indeed before us, and there are some marvelous professionals listening to this program right now who are looking and listening and reading your website very carefully. Anyone who would like to get in touch with you, Clifford, the email issue is tough, I know. Shall I just mark it urgent?
Yes, that would be helpful. And I guess, like I'm saying, at this stage, we need professional active involvement, not just discussion.
Got it. Okay. Stand by. We'll be right back. Another segment to go with Clifford Carnicom. His website again, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M, carnicom.com, chemtrails. And we'll continue in just a minute. With Clifford Carnicom and cellular material stained by iodine, three separate efforts to collect same has yielded similar, if not identical, results. What is it? We're asking for your help, professional, amateur, whatever. And if you really need to get in touch with Clifford, he is, as he said, trying to earn a normal living in addition to carrying on all of this research. And mark any email to him with an urgent, only if it is urgent, but if you really want to get involved with this and try and answer this riddle, and maybe some of you might want to do similar research in other parts of the country, that would be helpful as well. We will see. Keep in mind, Clifford lives at the 7,000-foot or thereabout elevation. He is up there. He is not at sea level. This is high and arid, but the results are there. Okay, Clifford, we have only one segment left, and you have many other issues you'd like to cover, so go ahead, and if you have more on this one, that's fine, but whatever.
Thanks, Jeff. I think it'll be okay there. Certain notions have been put forth suggesting actions such as a meat packing plant nearby, blood fertilizer. I can only say the notions that are being put forth do not appear to me to be very reasonable under the circumstances or environment under which they were collected. Obviously, there is a need to have the methods replicated in other portions of the country, but those suggestions do not appear to be very reasonable to me. There are no meatpacking plants here. Blood fertilizer, there is no really agriculture in this area. It's not an industry area. It's an expensive fertilizer, blood fertilizer is. If you look at Vincent Schaefer's atmosphere book and take a look at particulate matter sources and causes for it, expectations, you'll find three sources of particulate matter methods to create material. They include condensation of heated gases, they include mechanical decomposition, and they include a combination of condensation, coalescence, and agglomeration to form droplets or aggregates.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly in a standard atmospheric research book, there is no expectation of us finding biological components on a widespread basis and being repeatable. In terms of another segment, which will be helpful to cover, I just posted this page tonight. It's been developing over last week also. But in addition to this method of electrostatic precipitation, I have also pursued an alternative and more conventional method of filtration called a HEPA filter. And there is a link on the page that on this case is titled HEPA
Biologicals Confirmed. Yeah.
In terms of accessibility, this method is truly accessible to us all. This is a HEPA filter will generally advertise itself to be 99% effective at capturing material down to 0.3 of a micron.
That's smaller than many viruses, folks.
So it's really a pretty incredible device also, but there are some differences here between these two methods, important differences. But in terms of access, people should understand that this filter was bought at a local Kmart store for $40. Most of them cost $100 to $200, but this particular model that is shown up there, there is really no excuse for any of us not analyzing, acquiring, and analyzing the results of HEPA filtration in our atmosphere. I think part of the trade-off or payoff is that with an air filtration system like this, you have a much longer period of time involved. This particular one I ran for a week, though, which still should be certainly considered very short-term. Ran the filter a week, and again am making an analysis for the existence of particulate matter. Our time is fairly short, what we have now, but what has occurred is that through a secondary filtration method, completely independent, I am finding the exact same results that I did find through the methods of electrostatic precipitation.
Same cellular
material. The same
material.
Material is showing its existence, the same receptivity to an iodine stain for that base material, emphasized for the base material, not necessarily the cells.
Right.
And it repeats itself, size, consistency, the whole bit. It's showing up there as well. Now, to extract that material from a filter is a little bit more involved because you've got to, you know, you got to deal with the fibers of the filter also. But it, again, is showing up there. the case for investigation, action, identification exists equally strongly with this secondary method of filtration that is available to really essentially any of us. If we can just get access to a microscope, that might be the harder part of it. But I think there is a formal duty and obligation upon public servants of our country to contribute and participate to the provision of answers to the questions that are being raised. So these are also recent results. I have posted blood cells from a known human being, namely myself, on there for comparison. There will be this issue of size that comes about that's important. Something which is 5 microns across will be half the size of surface area, roughly, as something 7 microns a size, because it's a square function.
Okay.
So I guess the point is that the methods are available, and it is our duty to seek the answers. They are available. We just need the people with the tools and resources that I don't have to answer some very specific questions and detailed questions about what is being found. That really is the summation, Jeff, of my work and findings thus far, and it basically does end with that appeal. You know, this is a serious business we're in. The game playing won't go very far anymore. It's time to make a serious professional analysis, answer the questions that have been raised, investigate formally. As I said before, this is not going to go away. There are many of us who will keep on until we receive an accountability and a disclosure for what has transformed our atmosphere, and, you know, let alone the issues of health that we haven't even slightly begun to discuss, just talking on from an environmental side.
Exactly.
Alone.
Right. I would like to see a number of parallel efforts to retrieve data through one or both of these methods that Clifford has come up with. They're very simple. They're all explained on his website, and those results would be extremely helpful to helping this entire issue coalesce into something even more substantial than we have now. What we have now are very strong indicators. Would you agree with that, Clifford?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the status of the work is that there is a very strong or clear indication, you choose your word, but whatever you think is appropriate, of both a electromagnetic and a biological aspect to these operations, which have been conducted without informed consent for over the past 2 years in a very overt way.
Right, and the point is there is not just one thing going on necessarily. There may be 2, 3. We don't know. We just don't know. They may or may not be linked. We don't know. Correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless. If you just look at the electromagnetic portion, what we talked about last time,
sure,
there's at least a dozen and a half applications.
Well,
consider the role of bioengineering. What the heck does that open up?
Sure. Well, there are two mammoth doors that Clifford Chronicom is nudging open here. And again, when you consider, and go back in the archives. In fact, look at Chronicom.com. Look on the homepage. Clifford has been kind enough to put our interviews up there, 1, 2, 3, and 4. This will be the fifth one tonight. And if you'd like to avail yourself of literally a living history of this investigation, you can simply listen to the interviews that have shown Clifford to present such remarkable research time and time again that will, I am sure, leave you with an overwhelming amount of material to contemplate. Use his website as a tool, a device to go to people in your community, in your professional world, whatever, to have them look at the pictures, read the data. It's all right there. Clifford, I'm here to help any time. Keep me posted, as you always are kind enough to do, and it's a great pleasure and an honor to play a small role in bringing this information forward to the American public. Hopefully, some of the great folks listening will be able to lend a hand and push this even further than you already have.
Thank you so much, Jeff. You truly have the only true open forum that I haven't encountered regarding these events, and I thank you very deeply also for the role that you have played in helping this information get out.
Thank you, Clifford. Take good care.
Thank you.
Good night. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Have a good day tomorrow. See you in 21 hours.